Welcome to Module 4, and in this module I'm going to talk to you about quality apps. What criteria do we need to look for in order for an app to be educational or appropriate for young children? And there are a preponderance of apps currently available in the App Store. If we consider that the iPad has only been around since 2010, the fact that there are literally millions of apps for us to choose from is quite mind-boggling. So in a relatively short period of time, there are a multitude of apps from which we can choose. And as parents, we often think that going to the education category or perhaps even the apps for kids section will help to refine this search, but there are just as many in there. And as a children's technology and learning and development researcher, I've spent a good amount of time looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly apps with young children. My son proudly announced at preschool last year that mummy's job was to play games on her iPad, which it is, I guess, to some extent. And I have looked at lots and lots of different apps for young children. And as I mentioned in the introduction module, I've also been involved in several studies where we've evaluated the educational effectiveness of particular apps. And it really comes down to the design of an app. The way in which an app is organized and the types of thinking that it elicits is really the determining factor as to whether or not children learn and or benefit from the app. So in this module, I want to give you some really specific, clear guidance as to what you can look for. The reason being, as this video shows next, is that there are literally so many apps. There are apps for everything. And does that necessarily mean we need to be using them?
Yes, my friends! The iPogo can do anything!
Anything?
Oh, yeah!
If you want to comb your cat, there's an app for that. If you have to fix a flat, there's an app for that. Need a word that rhymes with that?
Map.
Or a place to hang your hat? Got a chimp who likes to chat. There's an app for that.
And I will pause it there because that catchy jingle will get stuck in your head. So there really are apps for everything, and that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to be using them with young children. The iPad shouldn't be a substitute for hands-on experiences where children get to physically manipulate objects. It's no substitute for real serve and return interactions. It's a complementary tool. It can complement other experiences. And we have to also be mindful of what's the value add. I've mentioned a couple of times in this workshop, is the iPad being used merely to replicate a traditional experience, or is it being used to allow children to learn and or play in different or improved ways? And that's a really critical filter through which we should run our decisions as to whether or not our children use the iPad. We want to use the iPad when it's affording and enabling new and improved ways of playing and or learning. So in this module, I'm going to talk to you about what's children's thinking role when they're using an app, and revise this concept of whether they're active or passive, because that's a really important distinction. Then I'm going to provide you with a really concrete example of how the design of an app really shapes what and how children learn. And then I'm going to give you some examples from what the research is telling us. At the moment, we've got some clear guidelines about what sorts of principles should be included in a good quality app for children. I'm going to share four of those with you from the research, and then I'm going to add my own four as well. So you'll have a total of eight different principles or criteria that you should be looking for in quality apps for children. So I'm going to start by giving you another framework through which you can consider the types of apps. Now, remember, in one of the earlier modules, I talked about thinking beyond how much, moving the conversation beyond how much screen time children are having to a conversation that focuses more on what children are doing. Excuse me. What children are doing with the iPad. And a clear distinction here is when children are using the iPad or another tablet device, are they being passive? Are they merely consuming information? So examples here are things like watching television episodes or YouTube clips or some of the more passive educational games. I often refer to these as edutainment. an app where the child's simply clicking on the right answer from a menu of choices. These apps require very little cognitive effort. I merely need to tap or swipe and I get the right answer, or I can sometimes just sit there and have the information delivered to me. Now, these apps are not necessarily toxic or to be avoided at all costs. We just need to use these very sparingly. What we want children to do is to spend most of their time with an iPad where they're assuming an active role, where they're creating digital content, where they're not simply consuming, but they're actively involved with their learning. This stops what I mentioned before, the digital zombie effect, and really fosters higher order thinking skills. This is where educators want children to be spending most of their time as well, where children are using the iPad to create. So an example here, we've got the very popular YouTube Kids app, and this provides children and families with access to age-appropriate media. Now, this has a very addictive potential, and I'm not saying it will cause your child to be addicted to technology, but this type of passive use of technology, children's brains get lots of hits of that dopamine for very little effort. So they're getting rewarded, but with very little effort required on their behalf. Something that's become very popular in recent times, particularly for preschoolers and children in the early years of school, are the unboxing videos. These are where children literally watch other children, often very manicured hands sometimes, they're adults' hands, but where they literally watch toy boxes get open for the first time and unboxed. And these clips have had huge popularity, especially amongst children, and they're seen as a really viable marketing tool for a lot of toy manufacturers, children's toy manufacturers. And children can become really hooked. They can become very dependent, and I'm cautious to use that word addicted, but they can become very dependent on watching these videos and find it really hard to switch off. And the reason is that they're actually having a neurobiological response when they're using these types of or watching these types of unboxing apps. As they're watching the host unpack the toys, their brains are releasing endorphins and dopamine because there's this sense of anticipation. What will actually come out of the box? They're eagerly anticipating what the toy is and what its features are. So there's that sense of excitement. Our brain, as we know, is also wired to seek novelty. So with unboxing videos, there's always something new to come out. It's why children love collector cards or collector toys. That sense of novelty is what we're primed. The prefrontal cortex is actually primed to seek novel experiences. So the brain is constantly scanning for sensory input that will provide it with something new and different. And unboxing videos can satisfy that need for novelty. There's always something new or different or unusual coming out of the box. So just a word of caution there about using unboxing videos sparingly. So you can see when children are passively consuming media, their thinking that's required is very minimal at best. Again, there's lots of neurobiological responses. Often it's a very pleasurable situation without very much effort required on the child's behalf. But if we contrast this to a more active role where children are creating content, it is a totally different way of thinking. Children recruit higher order thinking skills. They use language. They have to problem solve. They have to evaluate what they're doing. And so in this example here, children are using the app GarageBand and they're creating a musical composition. Now, I've seen this being done with preschoolers right up to secondary students. So children can actually compose their own music using this particular app and can use a range of instruments. In this example, children were given, this was done in a primary school, children were given a video clip. It was a copyright-free video clip that had no background music, and they had to create a musical score to accompany this particular scene. So using GarageBand, children composed their own audio and saved it and embedded it into this video so that it was a musical score for this clip. Now, this type of thinking is a lot more active. Children are utilizing all of those higher-order problem-solving skills. And it is distinctly different from the child who's passively watching. So again, another reminder that we want children spending most of their time down here, creatively and actively using the iPad, and spending less time. It doesn't mean they should never watch YouTube clips or more passive types of activities on the iPad, but it's about balancing them out. So now I want to give you an example of how the design of an app really shapes what and how children learn. So this is an example where children had to learn, let's say they were expected to learn some basic maths facts. So they were expected to learn their addition and subtraction facts. And you could have selected three different types of apps. So one of the apps is called Quick Maths, and this is a brilliant app by a company called Shiny Things. Then we have another app by Motion Math called Hungry Guppy, and another app called Explain Everything, which is a screen recording app. So it's a bit like a whiteboard presentation. It records all of the written annotations on a screen and any voice recordings that accompany it. So if children were using the Quick Math app, they are literally presented with a series of basic maths facts and they become progressively more difficult. This is a brilliant example of an app that is a responsive app. So it monitors the child's performance and then provides increasingly more challenging material as the child masters particular skills in the app. So using this app, there is just one right or wrong answer. Now the child can, in this instance, which is very creative, they can use their finger to write the answer to their questions. Now this app is basically teaching children, it's rote learning their basic number facts. And there is definitely a need for children to have automatic recall of basic number facts. But it's not getting the children to draw on higher order thinking skills. They're not applying this knowledge in this particular app. But this app may serve the purpose of your learners. They might be at the stage where they just need to rote learn their basic maths facts. So this app is very procedural. I call these instructive apps. They're very much in line with a textbook or a worksheet type of learning experience. The next app that we could have used in this example is a Motion Math Hungry Fish app. And in an earlier example, I showed you Hungry Guppy. This is a more advanced app for older children. And in this instance, children are still learning about their addition and subtraction facts. This is a more, obviously, more difficult example here. But children drag fish, drag bubbles together to feed them to the fish to give him the solution that's displayed on his back. And he either swallows the bubbles if they get it correct, or he burps them back out if they're incorrect. Now, again, this is slightly different to this app here, because in this app, I call this a manipulable app. This is an app where there's more than one right answer. So let's pretend it's not negative 10, let's pretend it's 10. In order to get the answer of 10, I might feed the fish a 7 and a 3. Or I may have fed him an 8 and a 2, or I may have fed him a 5 and a 4 and a 1. And there's more than one right answer. So this is very different to this app where there's just one answer that's possible. In this app, children can test out their hypotheses and manipulate their ideas on the screen and get that instant feedback. So there still is a correct or incorrect answer. The app's giving them that instant feedback, but it's also enabling them to explore and experiment with their ideas. Now, in the third app, this is a screen recording app called Explain Everything. And in this app, children can write down and record everything that they might know about the number 10. So in this instance, they might record their voice saying that I know 10 is made up of 5 and 5. They might draw a tens frame or a tens grid where they put 10 on it. It's an open-ended app where children can display what they know. In each of these apps, there's a distinctly different way that children are thinking. You can see, and again, it's about matching the tool to the task. Remember, the iPad is just a tool, and our job as parents is to match that tool to the task that they need help with. So in some instances, the Quick Maths option may have been the best option for your child. They may just need that rote learning, drill and skill type of learning. The Explain Everything app might be more suitable once your child has mastered this to give them an opportunity to show what they know. It would be very unfair to give our children an open-ended app like Explain Everything if they don't have the basic knowledge in the first place. So the timing is also really important. But we have to see how the design of an app really can either enable or limit what and how children learn. So now I want to give you some of the criteria. What should we be looking for? And I mentioned at the outset of this module, I'm going to share 8 principles with you. And four of the first four principles I'm going to share have actually come from a paper that was published in 2015 by the Psychological Science in the Public Interest. And this particular paper identified four key pillars of learning. So what are the principles, the basic principles from the neuroscience and from children's learning principles that determine effective learning? And this is on and off screen. So these are unchanging basic learning needs that children have. And the four of them are meaningful learning. So learning needs to be meaningfully connected. It has to be active. Young children need to be actively involved. It needs to be engaging and appealing to what interests the child. And it also needs to facilitate social interaction. In addition, the extra four principles I add is that apps should also facilitate and provide scaffolding. So they need to help children learn progressively. They also need to bolster children's language skills. We know that language immersion and use is really critical for optimal learning. The app also needs to provide really precise and explicit feedback. And the app also needs to add value. It needs to enrich the ways in which children learn and or play. So let's dive into meaningful. Very important. Do you remember a time, perhaps you remember a boring university lecture or something at school? We're very unlikely to be able to recall learning if it wasn't personally relevant in the first place. Think back to the most powerful lesson you learned at school. It was probably a story or an understanding about something that was really pertinent to you. And the same is true for children. Young children need to be able to attach meaning to what they're actually seeing on the screen. And this is why we have to be really careful about what age we introduce iPads to young children. We have something called the transfer deficit, and I mentioned this in module one. But the transfer deficit is estimated to exist until children are about 3 years of age. So this means that it takes young children twice as long to learn something from a two-dimensional screen than it would take them from real three-dimensional objects or from interaction with an adult. And they also tend to recall fewer details when they're using a 2D screen. So this doesn't mean that children can't learn from iPads, young children. It just means it's usually harder for them to learn from an iPad than from a real person or an object. So another reminder, we need to be very careful about, again, what children are doing with the iPad. Are they merely playing apps that teach isolated skills and concepts? So are they just learning their letters, shapes, and numbers? We want children to meaningfully connect these types of experiences on the screen to their real life world. We don't need to teach rote learning principles to young children, especially under the age of five. There's no hurry to push down the academic curriculum. So instead, we should be looking for apps that encourage meaningful learning. This might include storytelling apps, and I'm going to give you some examples in a moment. We also have some photo annotation apps where children can put text on top of photos that they've taken. These apps promote real learning, and they also at the same time develop your child's language and higher order thinking skills as well. So here are some examples of some photo annotation apps. So these are really, really powerful apps that get children to actually put text over photos that they've created. So great if you go on a holiday or if you go on a trip to the zoo or trip to the beach. These are also great at getting kids to connect real life examples. So in the picture here on the left, children had to go and take photos of 3D shapes in their environment. There are lots of different examples of these. PicCollage is one of the free examples that I recommend, but there's lots of other examples. A Beautiful Mess is another one. Rona is another great app. So any app that lets you put text on top of a photo. And again, this is something that children can do, or they can do it in collaboration with adults. The storytelling apps that I shared earlier, one of the examples, Book Creator, a great way for children to make meaning from the screen so they can draw on their own personal experiences, whether they've taken photos or videos, and then add text and voice to them as well to meaningfully recount and describe an experience that they've had. So really, really important. We also want to provide a context that's relevant for children. So in this example here, children are playing using an app called Happy Full Throttle, and it turns the iPad into the console of a vehicle, be it a fire truck, a sports car, a submarine, or a helicopter. And they move around in their real physical environment. The app uses the device's camera, and they get to interact and explore. And it promotes wonderful positional language and descriptive language as well. And it's meaningfully relevant to the children. We've also got apps that make really abstract concepts very overt and meaningful. So using this app Up to 100, children get to experiment and create representations of numbers literally up to 100, but it helps to make the abstract concept of number much more concrete and relevant. So you can see in the screenshot here, children are actually placing beads on a screen, and they can see that 35 is literally made up of three lots of 10 and five individual ones. So really important first principle is that learning is meaningful. Principle number two is that apps promote active learning. Children need to play a really active role, and that can be physical and or mental, for their learning to be effective. However, when it comes to app design, this has to be more than what we call surface level interaction. Just tapping or swiping at a screen or tilting the iPad is not necessarily interactive. That's what we call surface level interaction. We have to look for apps that go beyond this stimulus response type of action or interaction. We want kids meaningfully and really actively being involved in the experience. So here is the Jack and the Beanstalk example. And I've put a screenshot in here of one of the scenes where Jack is stuck in the giant's castle, and in order to try and get out, the child has to put back together. Jack's accidentally knocked over a mirror, and he needs to put the mirror back together. But this app uses your device's built-in camera, and now the child, that's a photo of me, now the child is actually in the castle with the giant and is trying to put the mirror back together, the jigsaw puzzle, so that they can help Jack to escape. So this is a really different experience for young children. It's a much more active type of book experience than what a traditional book is. We've also got apps where children are creating their own story. So their own, literally in this example, their own television show. So they have to plan a script and then deliver a script and then record it and save it. So they're highly involved in the task. We've also got some popular apps for young children, such as Play School Art Maker. And this app actually lets children create their own simple movies with some of the popular Play School characters that they may be familiar with. So in all of these examples, the child is highly active and engaged with what they're doing. And this leads on to the third point, which is engagement. This is the third principle for effective app design. Young children, we all know young children love being actively involved. And apps provide a wonderful way to foster children's learning, but if they're not well designed, apps can actually distract children from the task at hand. And this is especially the case with preschoolers or for children with additional learning needs. They can become very easily distracted. They often don't have the impulse control skills that enable them to stay focused. So we need to look for apps that, as I've mentioned throughout this workshop, they don't contain too many bells and whistles. Parents need to be able to control things like background music or the pace at which the app progresses or any other distracting elements if possible. So some examples here of where children are engaged with the learning. This is another app by the company Shiny Things. They made the other example I showed you, Quick Math. And in this example, children have to write, not just tap, they have to actually use their finger and or a stylus to write what they think the answer is. This is a very different process to just tapping on what the right answer might be. In this example, and reminder, all of these apps are listed in a separate handout if you want to see what they are and find links directly to the app store as well. But in this example, Math Doodles is probably designed for 8 to 12 or even 8 to sort of 15-year-olds, and it gets children to create They have to manipulate tiles on a screen to reach the targets at the bottom of the screen. So children have to move a bit like the Rubik's cubes, where you move things around and gradually get the right example, a great answer. And in this instance, children have to manipulate digits and different representations of numerals. So there's Roman numerals, decimals, fractions, and they have to represent them to reach a designated target. This is a very actively, are very engaged in this task. There is a very prescriptive result that needs to be achieved. We also have a range of new devices that are working in conjunction with iPads, and Osmo have created a physical contraption. So it's a plastic mold that sits your iPad sits in, and it comes with a mirror that sits over your device's camera. And using this particular these physical products in conjunction with your iPad, it turns your iPad into an interactive experience. So this video here shows you where you purchase this device, and it comes with some Tangram and letter pieces as well. And as this video shows you, children actually use these pieces to physically manipulate things off the iPad, but the iPad gives them feedback. I'm not going to play that one for you, but basically you can see exactly what children are doing on the iPad, and it gives them some prompts and some scaffolding, so they're very much engaged in the task at hand. The next principle, and the fourth principle that came from this paper, was that apps need to promote social interaction. I've talked a couple of times in this workshop about the need for serve and return ping pong interactions. Apps really need to provide and facilitate that ping pong interaction. The neuroscience tells us very clearly this is what young children need in particular to learn. So we have to make sure that their time online is actually a social experience. We need to therefore find apps that encourage multiple users or invite conversation and interaction. And I'm going to share with you some examples now. The apps I mentioned before, Kindoma, the storytelling app with the pop-up videos, and the Kindoma drawing app, are great examples here as well. But using this particular app, felt board, children can have multiple children creating felt board creations simultaneously. Now, the iPad has 11 simultaneous touch points, meaning that it's actually physically designed to encourage multiple children to use the device. So in this example, children can meaningfully create something together on the screen, and it facilitates that type of collaboration and use of language. Tokaboka make a brilliant range of play-based apps that really do foster social interaction. In this example here, Toka Hair Salon Me, children can insert their own photographs and then can give the most elaborate haircuts with scissors and clippers and foam and spray paint and all sorts of tools. And can manipulate these easily on the screen. Now, this is great for collaboration and play, and also great for promoting this social interaction. So there we have the four basic principles. I'm now going to share my four that I think also need to fit here. And the fifth one is that apps need to provide really appropriate scaffolding. So we know that young children's literacy skills and often their fine motor skills are still under development. So we need to find apps that match this level of development. So having a really precise hotspot on a screen that you have to touch exactly may not be relevant if an app's been designed for a three-year-old. At the same time, an app for a five-year-old probably shouldn't have too much text because the chances are the child probably won't be able to read all of that text. So we need to make sure that the apps provide appropriate levels of scaffolding. So an example here is a great app called Motion Math Fractions. And using this app on your device, you relies on the device's accelerometer. So the children tip the device, the iPad, to have the fractions that are projected from the rocket land on the appropriate part on the number line. So they need to put these fraction notations onto a number line by tilting the device. It provides really scaffolded feedback. So if the child's getting it incorrect, the app will give them some prompts. There could even be a built-in tutorial that guides children through how they can solve the right answer. We've also got some incredible play apps that are using other physical objects. So the example I showed before with Osmo, with the Tangram tiles, we're seeing new inventions come out all the time where children are actually manipulating physical objects in conjunction with the iPad, but in a very scaffolded way.
Stories. They made us laugh, cry, and stretch for the stars. Now our kids can create their own digital stories using Tiggly Words. Tiggly Words brings learning to life with a set of toys designed to interact with your tablet.
The pug's going away in the cab.
Cab. Fun.
I have an A. I'm going to make a hen.
Let's try me.
Hen.
I'm going to make them big, and I'm going to make them bad.
Please, 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 take us to the beach.
Discover language patterns. Stretch your vocabulary. Elver.
An elver. What's an elf?
Stretch your imagination.
Let's feed him shrimp.
Let's try an egg.
Maybe we'll see a turtle at the beach.
In this instance, the children are getting scaffolded advice about what to do next, and their learning is supported in that way. This is also a brilliant storytelling app. Using this particular Lego movie making app, children are guided through the process. So they're told to first insert their video footage, then they give their movie a title, then they can add credits to the end of it. They're given scaffolded prompts to insert music, etc. So the finished product is a really professional looking video, but the whole process has been scaffolded throughout. The sixth learning principle that I suggest we should look for are apps that are language rich. Again, the neuroscience tells us very clearly young children need opportunities to hear and use as much language as possible in the early years. So we need to find apps that encourage the use of language and language use in a meaningful way. So for example, the app GarageBand. Children can record their voice. They can tell you a funny story, or they might want to tell you a joke. They can add music to a story that they've created as well. So this is a great app that really bolsters the language experiences that children have. I showed an example earlier of Chatterpix, where you can turn any photograph into a talking character. And some of the other earlier examples with Telegami, with Kids Flashcard Maker, and also with Book Creator. These types of apps really facilitate that immersion in language. So again, children are hearing and using as much language as possible. We've also got great apps like Metamorphabet that teaches children important new vocabulary, but in a playful way. A reminder again that apps are no substitute for real serve and return interactions with your child. We still need to have those off-screen language-rich experiences. But if children are going to use their time on the iPad, we do want to make sure that they're trying to use apps where their language is supported and promoted. We also need to ensure that apps give really precise feedback. Generic or very bland feedback like bad luck, good job, try again, is really actually unhelpful, particularly for young children. If we want them to learn and improve from using the app, we need to provide them with really explicit feedback. So for example, the Motion Math Hungry Guppy example that I've shared a couple of times in this presentation is a really great example. When children feed the fish the incorrect digits, the fish burps them back out. So they're forced, remember, this causes what we call cognitive conflict. It forces children to reconcile their errors instantaneously rather than perpetuating them over time. So if feedback is very precise and specific, it can really help children to improve. So examples like Little Digits, where children literally place the corresponding numbers of fingers onto the screen to represent a digit, gives very clear and precise feedback if the child got it wrong or right. Another app like Aussie Kids Count Coins, again, very explicit and direct feedback. The child either gets the content correct or incorrect. This is much easier to do with apps where there is a definitively wrong or right answer, so subject matter or apps where there is the correct or incorrect response. For some of our more open-ended apps or for more creative types of apps, the apps where children are actually creating content, it's often much more difficult to give this feedback. But it's often not required because children are, there's no one right answer to check. So if they are using apps where there is feedback, always check that it's quite precise feedback. And the eighth and I guess the most critical thing, and this comes back to this idea of chocolate covered broccoli, is this just a digital worksheet? Is it just a set of digital blocks? If it is, what is it doing that the traditional materials can't? And if there are no value add elements, don't use it. Avoid using the iPad. We have to be really mindful that we're not just using technology for the sake of it. We have to avoid apps that are mere replicas of traditional toys or hands-on experiences. Does your child really benefit from colouring in on the iPad? Wouldn't a real colouring in sheet and some pencils be a better option? Believe it or not, there's a plethora of digital bubble wrap apps out there. We have to be really mindful. That's not necessarily best use of the technology. So we want to look for apps that allow children to learn and or play in different ways. So Monster Physics is a prime example. Children are often given in this app a design brief that they then have to meet, and they create an invention, and they get access to a range of physical objects. So they might have to meet a particular slope brief, or there might be some friction, and they get to test out their hypotheses and their constructions using this particular app. Now, this would be nearly impossible to replicate off screen unless you had access to a wealth of materials like magnets and cannons and rockets and stabilizers. But on the screen, it can present opportunities for children to explore and learn in, again, totally new ways. This isn't to say, really important, that this is a replacement for hands-on experiences, but it's just providing, it's an example of the iPad providing new or different ways for children to learn. Another exciting way is where children combine, they amalgamate apps together. So in this example, children have created some felt board creations using the felt board app. They've then imported they've taken photographs of each of their felt board scenes. They've then imported them into the iMovie app. And so it looks like an animated felt board scene where each of the different scenes have progressive amounts of movement. And then they've added a musical score using GarageBand. Now, this is a totally different way of learning that we couldn't replicate with the traditional felt board. So this is a really fantastic example of showing what the value add is. Really important in this module that I finish off with this idea that technology and the iPad in general specifically is not a replacement for hands-on experiences. Kids still need to have opportunities where they touch and manipulate real life objects. They need unstructured play opportunities. They need rich interactions with their peers and their siblings and their adult carers. But what it is a really powerful reminder, I think, too, is that this whole idea, one of my core messages at the outset of this presentation, is that we have to teach children how to balance. We need to teach them how to have rich screen experiences and then also how to switch off these experiences and engage with real life activities and meaningful experiences, too. Our next module, I'm going to talk to you about some healthy habits. What are children's digital habits and how do we ensure that they're healthy? How do we promote and protect their vision, their hearing, their musculoskeletal development, and also some issues regarding Wi-Fi?